Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, it is week 7 of Golf Return. We're putting a pin on the 3M Open and, yes, of course, some golf on TV drama, or should I say soccer on golf TV drama, plus podcast exclusive picks for this week's WGC event in Memphis. We toast to a legend, give you what we're tuned into, our thoughts on empty stadium baseball, cardboard cutouts, crowd noise, the whole nine yards, and we have not one, but two great guests this week. First guest is Anna Minimi, who is a pro golfer who also talks about winning and competing in speed golf competitions. We're talking fast golf, and we're also talking resort golf with Eric Claxton, the director of golf at the High Regency Hill Country Resort and Spa in San Antonio, where I went for the first in our series, the COL Playcation Series, so we get into travel and resort life there as well. But first, we're proudly sponsored by Planeswing. It's the world's number one golf swing trainer used by golfers in over 80 countries and counting. Everyone from beginners to the world's best like Bryson, DJ, and more. Planeswing enhances communication between coach and student to facilitate rapid improvement. It's all about repetition in the golf swing, and no other training aid allows a golfer to feel the proper movement the way Planeswing does. Unique weighted power slider comes with each plane swing, and it's your new golf fitness tool. It strengthens your muscles, builds your core, and helps that crucial motor skill change that we refer to as muscle memory. It allows you to develop a powerful and repeatable motion to your ideal golf swing plane. So Plane Swing's got 3 different packages, and they even have play and swing for the kids as well, so they can start off right. You can check out planeswing.com, PLANESwing.com to learn about their products. Sign up for a free and exclusive instructional video and join the Planeswing revolution on your path to better shots and lower scores. Again, that is planeswing.com. Check them out today.
And welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read podcast network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Groove It Golf, and Plane Swing. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it was a fun weekend of golf up there in the Tri-Cities area Minnesota.
Yeah.
Nice course. Before we get into the golf, can we talk about the football Sunday morning?
Yes, let's get right into the controversy and the Twitter yelling that happened on Sunday. I tune in for some final round early coverage on Sunday morning, like I like to, you know, get a little early glimpse in on the golf channel before they go to the network. And lo and behold, on Sunday morning, when they had all sorts of things they could have shown, pregame, they could have shown the rerun of the European Tour finish on Saturday, which was a great one. But instead, no, they were showing Premier League soccer on the Golf Channel on Sunday morning. It was quite a sight for sore eyes for golf fans, and obviously led to Twitter hysteria because, you know, what else do we have better to do on Twitter in 2020, right?
Yeah, I mean, I understand how these different contract deals work out, and that's why sometimes you see these sports on these channels and stuff like that. You used to even see like sports on MSNBC and stuff, yes, you know, early morning during the overnights or whatever. But I don't understand why we're putting soccer on a golf channel.
Listen,
I'm sorry.
I get the contracts, okay? I hate the people on Twitter who are like, oh, you clearly don't understand how TV contracts work. No, I understand how they work. I just know this is a bad one, okay? Yep. This is a bad one when you're showing a soccer game on the Golf Channel. I don't care how many networks or how many channels available you have. There's something functionally wrong with that. And this is now the second week in a row that there's just weird, quirky thing happening on Sunday of a golf tournament. We saw it at Memorial as well, too. It's funny because we run into these scenarios at growing moments when we're just trying to get eyeballs in the game of golf, and just these quirky-ass things come up that are unexplainable at times. But yes, you saw soccer on the Golf Channel on Sunday morning. Fortunately, they did eventually get to the golf all afternoon.
Thankfully. And maybe some of those people that tuned in for the Premier League stuck around to watch Michael Thompson win his second time on tour.
Yes.
Big win for him. First in like, what, 7, 8 years, whatever.
Yes, it was. The last one was I think, Honda Classic or PGA National a while back. And it's always good, the second win. You know, a lot of guys just win once on the PGA Tour and you never hear from them again. The list is endless. But the guys who finally validate that, and he talked about that and how emotional he got on after the 18th green for his family and whatnot and everything they've been through. and really gave a lot of confidence to the guy. And Mike, you know this better than anyone. The shot that sealed it on 16 was like a 40-yard bunker shot, greenside.
Yeah, I saw that shot.
That he hit to like 3 feet. Damn. That's balls right there.
It was a crazy shot. That was something you expect to see from the likes of Phil or Tiger. So just a great bunker save. Yeah. A lot of good putting throughout. I think he led the field in putting average or one of the putting stats, whichever one it was.
Too, on the greens. Yeah. Absolutely.
Granted, he had a lot of nice short putts, so that helped.
It does help. It takes the pressure off on Sunday for sure. Played a flawless 18th hole for that victory. My pick came close again. I picked six guys on Twitter at Course of Life 1. You're at MWRINC. Max Homel was my guy. He had a close call. There were a few guys that could have birdied the 18th to post that 17 under number and be a bit more of a threat to Thompson, but Homel came up short. Watch out for him in the next couple weeks, though. Well, definitely a guy we'll be tailing in the next few weeks on tour.
Let's also talk about, again, no fans. A lot of nice houses lining the course out there. Yes. In Minnesota. No fans to be seen once again. I don't know why aren't more people taking advantage of their backyards?
There was some second floor, you know, the lifted porches, you know, in the Midwest. Yep. That have the nice overlook of the golf course. There were some wonderful settings. I don't know why people didn't take advantage. You'll appreciate this. I saw a funny tweet last week that went out. Someone had the wherewithal to search for all the open houses on the course at TPC Twin Cities. And they had the idea that, hey, maybe we can just kind of open house shop and pretend like we're interested in all these horses, these houses that are right on the course, make a day.
It'd be an interesting way to go.
Absolutely. It was quite out there.
There was good news out of the PGA Tour. Nothing new on the corona front.
Yes, yeah, seriously. That's nice to say.
Clean,
right?
Week. It all went to another sport. We'll talk about that later on in the episode. But let's get on to some other things that happened in the world of golf. Korn Ferry Tour. Let's talk about our boy, Dylan Wu.
Yes, past guest. We got to shout out the archives of our episodes. And in case you're just hopping on, we've interviewed countless LPGA, Korn Ferry, PGA pros, and everyone in the world of golf and outside that loves to play the game. Dylan Wu is one of our best guests from the Korn Ferry. He had another backdoor top 10, 63 on Sunday, Mike. That's the nice way to finish the week. So I saw that he just got permission to have his girlfriend to travel on the road with him now. So they're going to have a good time for the rest of the summer. Hopefully he can stack those top 10s up, and he's in the driver's seat to get in that PGA Tour card. So shout out to our past guest, Dylan Wu.
Speaking of past guest, Cheyenne Knight, who is just on LPGA Tour, is starting back up again as well in Ohio.
Yeah, this is great. Hashtag rise up, the drive on event there in Ohio. I think they're staying 2 weeks in Ohio. They're kind of doing a similar thing to what was done with the memorial for the PGA Tour folks earlier this month. So shout out to the ladies that are back and just more golf on TV. I think if my memory serves me correctly, this is the first weekend where we're going to have the wall to wall on Golf Channel, where we could get a Euro Tour morning, a PGA afternoon, and we can sneak in some LPGA in the afternoon or evening as well. So we can get three tours this weekend if you play your cards right out there, golf fans.
It's sure to be good.
It's good. We're back. We're fully back in golf.
We got two PGA Tour events this weekend.
That's right. Four. Sorry, make it four.
We have the Barracuda, aka the everyone who's not as good as everyone else.
Yes, unfortunately. Yeah, but opportunities. Shout out to our guy, Monday Qualifier Info on Twitter. This is like his favorite tournament of the year. He said a couple days ago, there's only one tournament on the PGA Tour in my mind, and it ain't in Memphis. So he's a big Tahoe fan for the lesser known players, the guys that need that opportunity. They're also going to be playing. And you like this too. They're doing the Stableford scoring, which is like the point system for birdies, eagles, bogeys, and pars, depending on how they do in the food. So it gets a little weird on the leaderboard. So adjust your eyes when you see that this weekend.
And the main event this weekend for the rest of us, what people will be watching this weekend on TV, is the WGC FedEx St. Jude in Memphis.
Yes, the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational in Memphis. And it's presented by someone, I'm sure.
Probably.
That is a SEO search engine optimization nightmare.
It is.
How are you supposed to search for that?
Especially since Tiger Woods isn't going to be playing.
Yeah,
so.
I know. No, Tiger, he's laying off. Focused on the PGA next week. All in at Harding Park, I guess.
So. Yeah, we'll see what he does. But let's talk about who you have in your podcast exclusive picks. What you got?
That's right. First up, Patrick Cantlay, 19-1, finished in the top 10. I'm going with two guys that have performed well last year here and also have good form recently. So we start with Cantlay at 19-1, my first podcast exclusive pick. The second one, a guy who makes his own beer. He mows his own lawn. He's got one of the nicest backyard practice facilities in the world. Check it out on social media. It's the Aussie Mark Leishman going off at 60-1. Both these guys finished in the top 15 here last year and they're playing decent recently. So mark them down and check out the rest of my picks again on Twitter at Course of Life One for this week. And it's WGC time and a major next week. We're officially in the grind now. It's exciting.
It's crazy. What was the number? What did we put the over under at for the number of majors this year? Was it 1.5 or was it?
It was 1.5. Yeah, because we already scrapped the British. We were very unsure about the U.S. Open in New York in September. But all of a sudden, the U.S. Open in New York in September actually feels a lot more feasible than it did 3 months ago, which is crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the question. I don't think we defined the terms of what we meant by the year, whether we meant 2020 or the 2020 golf season, because there are going to be multiple majors in the 2020-2021 season.
Oh, yeah.
But they will fall within the 2020 calendar year.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for sure. The PGA Tour did some serious. We remember talking about this. We're like, they are doing some serious wheeling and dealing and shuffling in the schedule. But I give them credit because now looking back, it was smart planning and they do have things set up right for the next few months of the golf season. So it was weird in the moment. But now as we sit in late July, I'm excited for what's to come.
It'll be a fun couple weeks.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Tuned In.
I don't know. I'm just throwing around random names.
We're just going to have a new name for this segment every week. Okay. What Until we're doing, approach. What we're tuning into outside of sports. It kind of works. I like it enough. Yeah. Mine, surprisingly enough, I am 3 months behind everybody.
Yes, you are. It's okay.
Because Netflix just rolled out The Last Dance.
That's good. Just in time for the NBC season to get back, too.
Just in time. And I'm four or five episodes in, however many I've watched. Listen to Merv Albert highlights.
The NBA on NBC.
Yes.
Oh, man.
A lot of good going on.
The 90s, you know, right? The 90s.
It's the 90s. I know now what you were talking about all those months ago when we were recapping every week and every episode, and I had no idea what was happening. we just got through the migraine game. So
nice. Yes, that's right.
The Bulls are finally on top. They finally got their championship. So.
Yeah, man. Hopefully they can get it done again. That young Jordan, you know, I think he's got a lot of potential. So you let me know if he gets another one, okay?
Oh, I will. Yeah. I will.
No spoilers there. Shout out to The Last Dance again. Basketball season back. We'll talk about them next week in the NBA. My picks tuned in. I've been giving a lot of music picks recently. I got two this week. Obviously, the elephant in the room, Mike. I can't talk anything music or even mention the word music without saying Taylor Swift dropped an album out of nowhere last week.
Out of nowhere.
What are your I never really asked you this question. Where do you stand on Taylor Swift as an artist?
I like some of her stuff. Her last album, so the one before this one, I was not a fan of.
Okay. Yeah, well, I got good news for you. I think you would like this from an audio perspective. It's called Folklore. It is a bit of a mood music album. It's a little melancholy, but it's not quite the overproduced pop that you tend to steer away from. It's not the country vibe that you tend to steer away from. It is very folksy music, very well composed, very emotional and raw. So for that, I do give it a thumbs up rating. You just got to be in the right mood to listen to it. That's what I'd say about that.
Okay.
Secondly, got to shout out our guy, Tiger Hoods. He's also got a new album out as well, too. Tiger Hoods, a great golf rapper, the best rap golfer in Texas. He was a great guest here a few weeks ago. We put out a new album full of all the tracks. We put a couple on the podcast and just love the energy that he's bringing. Been glad to network with him and definitely check out his album as well. So two great picks for this week.
Let's bring back a segment that we haven't had in a long time. I feel like the true pop politics segment is back.
Yes.
Because Trump is in the spotlight with golf again.
Golf trending for the wrong reasons again. I flip on Twitter, I'll go trending topics in like a random Saturday afternoon. I'll see golfing trending on Twitter. I'm like, oh, great. A lot of people are out there hitting the course. It's a trending topic. Maybe there's a bunch of new PGA Tour fans. No, it's about Donald Trump golfing on the course. What? I should have known better, but the newest controversy surrounding Turnberry, we highlighted this venue a lot in Commander in Chief in our book report. Yep. He is just desperately trying to get Turnberry back on the world stage. And we found out that he basically went as far as to try and bribe world leaders and officials in an effort to get the British Open back to Turnberry, a property he now owns. Just another funny step in Donald Trump, just trying to weasel his way into the golf game as much as possible. It had to be noted.
I will say let bribery in getting certain sporting events to go to certain places is very common.
And it does work a lot. So I give him credit for trying. I don't give him credit for doing it as cavalierly as he did, but he is always fighting the fight for Turnberry. That's for sure, since it's become his property. So Trumpian golf back in the news. But that's pop politics. I think it's time, because we got two guests this week, to get into our interviews.
We do. Let's get into the first one. It's Anna Minami. She's a professional women's golfer, but she's won a speed golf competition. And speed golf, Alex, yes. I've seen this. It is crazy.
Fast. She's going to get into how fast she plays 18 holes, how many clubs she carries. There's a lot of strategy that I didn't quite think out before I talked to Anna and had this conversation. Very enlightening how the speed golf world works. Very good conversation here.
It's pretty crazy. But first, we want to let you know this conversation is brought to you by Groove It Golf, makers of the Groove It Golf Brush, which actually would be perfect for speed golf because you have a brush on your bag
while you
that
run.
Has a clean solution in it. You can detach it from your bag because it's got magnets. You can quickly clean that club as you're running to your next shot. It's fantastic.
Love that
angle. It's what we all need on the course. It is currently sold out, but you can get on the order list to be ready for when it's back in stock and get this thing on your bag. It's also got a 3-year bristle guarantee. So if you wear out the brush head cleaning your golf clubs in 3 years, send it back. They'll send you a free replacement. It's incredible reliability from our friends at Groove It. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control the clean grooves will give you. Using your existing golf clubs with the Groove It, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So head on over to grooveitbrush.com and get your Groove It brush on order today.
Next up on the tee, we have the professional running golfer. We're going to get into that nickname as well, who is also a KU alum. It's Anna Minami joining the Course of Life. Anna, how are you doing today?
Great. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Definitely. So let's start at the beginning for you, because I know you were actually born in London. So tell me about your first memories growing up there. And do you have golf memories specifically from your earliest days?
So I started playing golf when I was 3 years old. Golf has always been a part of my life. I honestly don't remember starting golf. But yeah, I lived in London for 3 years, Russia for 3 years, Switzerland for 6 years, and then I moved to the States. So definitely playing golf in Europe has kind of developed my golf style. I tend to hit the ball pretty low. I like to hit knockdown shots. So I think that's because of the weather and how windy it gets in Europe.
Yeah, definitely. So you've got the British Open game, I guess, ready to go, right?
Yes.
Nice. And so you mentioned you did lots of traveling in your junior years. Is that because of your family? I'm guessing someone in your family may have had a really high profile job or was part of the military or something. Is that right?
Yes, I get that a lot. My dad's in the oil industry.
Oh, okay.
And so that's why now I'm in Houston.
Got it. That makes a lot more sense now. And you've been different places in the United States as well. I know when you first got over to the United States, you moved to South Carolina and the Hank Haney Academy. We featured his book, The Big Miss, on this podcast and talked a lot about his time working with Tiger Woods. So our audience knows him very well from that. What did you know about moving to South Carolina and being there and going to that academy to improve your game?
So actually when I first went to the IJGA Golf Academy, it was Gary Gilchrist that ran it before he had his own academy. And then Hank Haney came. That was definitely the big story. And then there was a reality TV show that happened as well on Golf Channel when Hank Haney came. I was in that for like 2 seconds.
Nice. Yeah, I remember it vaguely.
It was I was definitely a little intimidated by Hank Haney, but he would sometimes walk around, watch the players hit balls in practice. But my fond memory of Hank Haney was I was at a qualifier for the Junior Heritage Classic, and I shot 67. And then the next day, he actually went up to me and congratulated me. And I was just like, oh my gosh, he actually knows who I am.
That's good. That's good to get on his radar. Yeah. So, and we mentioned that in the book. It was interesting to see his relationship with Tiger Woods. For the people that you did see him work with, was he always kind of just like watching from the sides and kind of, you know, putting his own thoughts together? Or did you see him be very hands-on with some other students there?
He would definitely watch from the sides. But I don't know. I guess... I don't know. He would talk to the coaches a lot, and I guess they would kind of, he would kind of put his own input with each student, but he was definitely really busy. So I understand that he couldn't spend much time with the kids.
And I know definitely, yeah. He was working with a guy named Tiger for a while there too.
Yeah,
so it makes a lot of sense.
Tiger Woods. So
yeah. Nice. And obviously going to that academy made you have a great junior career and allowed you to get recruited for college, but you went to a couple of different schools. Describe kind of your path in college that eventually got you to Kansas.
Right. So I first committed to a smaller D1 school, but a really good school called Kennesaw State, which is in Georgia.
Yep.
And at the time, I didn't really care about the name. I mean, I liked Kennesaw State because they had a good golf program, and the coach like really wanted to recruit me. And I enjoyed the team atmosphere and everything, so that's why I went there. But afterwards I realized I guess it wasn't really a good fit for me. That 1 year I was homesick and I don't know, I just wasn't playing well. And so I decided to transfer, and I was very fortunate because my swing coach at the golf academy, he married the assistant coach at KU, and he helped me so much with all the transferring process, and my coaches at KU really wanted me, so that really worked out. It was a messy transferring process, but I'm glad at the end it all worked out.
Now it's good that you have those contacts from the academy. It got you to where it was, because Kennesaw State to Kansas, that's definitely a big step in Division I.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about being at Kansas, though. Myself, just being a really huge college sports fan, I obviously know Kansas from basketball games at Fog Allen and how intense those can be. What was it like for you arriving on that campus and finally getting to like a real large scale American college, knowing that you were going to be an athlete there?
Yeah, so now I'm really grateful. I went to a big name school. I loved the big school atmosphere, and going to the basketball games was amazing. And when I was there, our team qualified for the 2014 NCAA championships, which was an extremely special moment because the only other time KU made it to the championships was in 1990. So I got to be a part of history as well. And also when I was there, I met Gary Wilmond, who was a fellow KU alumni, and it was really cool getting to see him win the U.S. Open and get to see him at the Zozo Championship in Japan this past year. So,
oh, you got to see him out there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to take a picture with him and say hi. It was amazing.
Very cool. Yeah, I was going to ask if there was any connection or if you'd met him at all from the Kansas connection, but talk about the time that you spent with him. He's a guy that, you know, not only strikes me as a really nice guy, but he's just a really, really hardworking player. He's very, very consistent and has a very good attitude. But what did you kind of learn most from maybe being around him and seeing him at work as a professional?
So definitely the first thing I noticed is how low he can hit the ball.
Oh, yes. He's very famous for the stinger. He is.
Yes. And it's perfect because I hit the ball low and, you know, Kansas is very windy. So I was like, we have something in common. But... yeah, but
very cool. It's funny when people think about Big 12 golf too, and especially on the women's side, you know, that is impressive that you talked about a moment ago, getting Kansas to the NCAAs, because it's always about, you know, I'm in Austin, so it's always about University of Texas and Oklahoma for the Big 12. And typically Kansas isn't part of that conversation. So that was very impressive when you guys were able to get to NCAAs. Talk about kind of like your game in college. You mentioned that you hit it low. Were you a longer hitter or were you kind of more of a precision player? And what's the best aspect of your game?
So I've definitely been always a precision player. I tend to not miss the fairway that often. And I've always had a pretty good iron game. And my putting is pretty good too. So I've always been the kind of player that didn't really make that many big mistakes. And I guess that helped a lot playing on the team.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, right now I average around 250 off the tee. So I'm not like the shortest hitter. I'm not the longest hitter. I'm just kind of like average.
Yeah, still further than me and a lot of people that are listening. So whatever gets it done. I'm curious because you mentioned before we hopped on that you do a lot of traveling now as a professional and have played a lot of and done a lot of miles professionally for tournaments. What was it first like coming out of college? What were your kind of first experiences with turning pro and what was that adjustment like for you?
So I've always been interested in playing on the Japan LPGA Tour, the JLPGA. So after I graduated college in 2016, I moved straight to Japan and just been trying to play on the tour there. It's actually a really hard tour to get on, so I haven't been successful yet.
Mm.
But I love being in Japan because women's golf is huge there. It's just so many sponsors and so many opportunities there for female golfers.
Yeah, and you've seen it obviously with the influx of Asian players that have come over to the LPGA and not only dominated on American soil, but the LPGA has stretched internationally and now incorporates so many more tournaments in Asia. And it just goes to show you that a tour like the JLPGA probably has just as much or close to as much talent as the LPGA does in the United States.
It
is worldwide for sure. So I'm curious, within all of your travels and playing the game and whatnot, I want to get into your career in speed golf, which a lot of people might not know a lot about. My first question for you is, when you played the game growing up as a kid or in college or anything like that, did you ever consider yourself a fast player? Are you a slow player in tournaments or what speed do you typically play at in a tournament round?
So it's funny. I've always liked long distance running. I was always pretty good at running, even at workouts in college. And I mean, I never thought I would do anything with it. But yeah, it's funny. I never heard of speed golf until 2018. And I was on a TV show in Japan, and the announcer for that TV show was a speed golf champion. And so she told me about it. And so I was like, oh, okay, maybe I'll try it because I liked running. And I mean, I've always considered myself a pretty fast player.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But after I did speed golf, I became even faster as a player.
Yeah, I bet it just kind of rubs off on you when you get used to it. So right. Describe to everyone how these speed golf competitions work. Are you primarily doing them by yourself or are they in a team format?
So they're mainly by yourself. So it's you running and you have a scorer with you in a golf cart. So he or she keeps track of your score.
Oh, okay. So you don't have to write it down. Okay.
No, you just have to shout it out.
I love it.
And it's like 4 minutes apart. So they do a countdown on the tee. They go like 10, 9, 8. And so right when they, when it hits one, you just, start running. And you carry a max of 7 clubs, but you can carry less than that. And there's this like small golf bag that you can carry, but some people just carry the clubs as well by hand.
Interesting. So how many clubs do you carry when you're in a speed golf competition?
So honestly, it depends on the course.
Okay, so you'll scope it out and kind of figure out exactly which ones you really, really need.
Yes, if it's a really short course, I tend to not take my driver, just start, take my 3-wood and then kind of take more shorter irons. but it really depends. Yeah.
Interesting. I'm curious. So you mentioned earlier that you like to hit it lower. I saw in some of the competition video, and again, you've got a YouTube channel as well, and your golfer_mini on Instagram, where you post these vlogs following your life, travel, competitions, and everything. You said you hit it a little bit lower. Do you think that helps in a speed golf competition? Is there a benefit to hitting it lower like you do? I feel like there might be.
Yes, because I love hitting knockdown shots. It doesn't really look like knockdown shot, I guess, for a normal person. But to me, it feels like I'm hitting like a half shot.
Mm.
And yeah, I think that definitely helps because for me, I can control the ball better. And yeah, like the biggest thing in speed golf is just not putting yourself in places that take time, like going into the bunkers and
kick-off
and stuff. So just putting yourself in play and hitting it straight, basically, it's the most important
thing. On green grass, right? Just keep it low on green grass. I like that. It's simple enough. So tell me about the championship that you won in 2019 for speed golf. Talk to me about how that happened.
So I played in my first speed golf event in December 2018. Before that, never heard of speed golf. And I never realized how hard it was. It really is a hard thing, speed golf. I thought I was fit enough, but apparently I wasn't. I shot 82 and I had a time of 78, which is really not that good.
Well, how does that time mean when you say a time of 78? Is it, how do they calculate that?
So they calculate, so you add your score plus the time. So that's your total. But all the really good speed golfers, they can play in under 60 minutes and under an hour. So they're really fast. And a lot of them can break 80. People 70s. So yeah, that's good.
I celebrate a 79 on the golf course, but that takes me 4 or 5 hours and they can do it in one.
It's crazy. But I guess I left a pretty good impression. So because next thing I know, I got invited to represent Japan in this speed golf type TV show in South Korea. And it was four international teams, Team Japan, Team UK, Team USA, and Team Australia. And then four teams representing Korea. And so it was like a match play format. It was really cool. It was like the first time we've all played it before.
Nice.
It was alternate shot. So, for example, I would hit first and then my partner would hit second. And then we just go back and forth. And then when we finish the hole, we just wait and watch the other team play it. And then to see who did better. And that's how you like calculate the match point. And yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was my second ever speed golf event. And I didn't expect to win the whole thing with me and my partner. It was crazy.
Very cool. And shout out what's the name of your YouTube channel so people can check out these videos of your competitions. It's FT Entertainment, correct?
So FT Entertainment is my management company.
Okay.
And my YouTube is Golfer Mini because my nickname in college is Mini. So that's why I use that.
I figured. Very cool. So again, it's golfer_mini on Instagram as well too. So now a couple of random questions I wanted to ask you. You must follow a lot of professional golf. I want to ask for one male and maybe one female professional that you would like to see or play against in a speed round. Who would be fun to see that's maybe a PGA or LPGA player that everyone knows play golf as fast as they can instead of in 4 hours?
Well, I know DeChambeau is notoriously known for being slow, so I think it would be funny.
He is hitting it very far, so it'd be interesting to see if he could start running after the drives, right?
That's true. Yes, that would be fun, I think.
Who's maybe the fastest player or even the slowest player on the LPGA Tour that might be fun to see in a speed round?
Ooh, I don't know. But it's interesting because Japanese professional golfers tend to be pretty fast just because they're very strict on pace of play on the JLPGA. So I don't know. I think a lot of the Japanese players are pretty fast.
I bet. Yeah, very cool. And then in terms of golf and your career itself too, what was maybe the best shot you ever hit in a speed golf competition? Do you have a hole-in-one in any of the speed competitions or when you're playing a speed round, or maybe the greatest shot you remember hitting when you're playing speed golf?
Ooh, I'm always shocked by how well I can hit the ball when I'm like rushing, and I've made some long putts before, and I'm like, I would never do this when I take my time.
Right.
I can't believe, and my short game is really good too. Like, I remember the last time we played speed golf, I made almost every up and down from the bunkers, and I was like, what? And I didn't take my time or anything. It's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, just know you're not thinking about anything. You're just letting it fly. Yeah, definitely. And what is the fastest 18 holes that you've ever played that you have timed?
So I still don't have enough speed golf experience. Last year, when I played in the Japan Speed Golf Open, I shot, my goal was to break 60 minutes, but I shot 81 in like 63 minutes. So I was really close.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, so my goal is to break 60 and shoot in the 70s.
Very cool. And like you mentioned before we hopped on, you're still playing professionally as well too on the Women's All Pro Tour. So you can follow Anna's scores along there as well. Again, it's Anna Minami, golfer_mini on Instagram. Anna, thanks again for joining the Course of Life. I'm looking forward to watching more videos of you in speed golf competition, and hit them straight and hit them fast too. Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
That interview with Anna Minami is thanks to our friends at Desert Fox Golf, the makers of the Phone Caddy. It's a one-of-a-kind fold holder for golfers designed to mount right onto the golf cart. The Phone Caddy works seamlessly with almost any phone model, and it Velcros onto the cart in seconds. Keep your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, and more, all with the Phone Caddy. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. And it is, of course, a great gift for any golfer, but it's also great to give at golf events or that golf trip with your buddies. What you can throw to them and keep socially distant, and it'll hold up for them. It'll be awesome. And right now, you can also save an extra 20% off your purchase with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. You can get any color combination you want on it. It's pretty amazing, some of the options they have, and save 20%. So again, get your Phone Caddy today with promo code COURSEOFLIFE at DesertFoxGolf.com. Again, that's DesertFoxGolf.com. And we're back. Great chat there with Anna. 18 holes in under an hour. Alex, could you do that? Do you think you could do 18 holes in under an hour?
I would like to give it a go. That's for sure. I never get an empty course like that. So I feel like what you got to do is you got to call your local course and get like the 5:45 a.m. tee time before even the old guys, you know? You got to get out there early so the course is your own. But yeah, it just has me thinking, should I try this? This could be a future content idea. Maybe I play around with Anna and we go speed golf. I'll be huffing and puffing by the end. There's no doubt.
You need to start training now. get on the treadmill. Get on the treadmill with your bag.
Yes. That'll look great at the gym. I can imagine you just like on a tight follow in a golf cart filming me. There's definitely a future there. I like that idea.
We're going to do it. We'll make it happen one way or another. It's going to be awesome. And, you know, maybe we can do it at the out in Hill Country.
Oh, yes. That would be nice. Take it to San Antonio or one of the other higher properties as well, too. Got a place I got to travel a few weeks ago. You saw a lot of my posts on social. They're on my Instagram. I'm at Course of Life Alex. You're at MWRINC. And the podcast is at COL Podcast. Anything hashtag COL Playcation to watch my visit there. But I got to sit down with the director of golf, Eric Claxton. First socially distant interview. We did a good job there, extended the mic out 6 feet at least. And it was good to talk with him. He talked a lot about the resort, running a resort, everything that goes into managing it, and more. So a really cool chat with Eric.
No
Next up, as part of our golf and travel playcation series here on The Course of Life, we are visiting the Hyatt Regency Hill Country Resort and Spa in San Antonio, and we're here with the director of golf, Eric Claxton. Eric, thanks so much for joining The Course of Life. How's it going?
Going great. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, so I mean, let's just kind of get into the background of the resort itself before we talk about you. For golfers looking to visit Central Texas, I'm from Austin. I know a little bit about the San Antonio area, but it wasn't quite the San Antonio like arrival I was expecting when I got here. This really is the Hill Country. What can people expect upon their arrival at the resort?
Exactly. You know, this. So we were the first resort in San Antonio built here in 1993. And the only thing here at that point, we're on the northwest side. And the only thing here at that point was SeaWorld. And now this is completely built up. You still have that country, hill country feel when you get here. But, you know, we definitely are built up. And there's a lot of great golf courses here in San Antonio that people don't really know of. We have our resort, which we were the first. We have 27 holes here. We also have La Quintera and JW Marriott, which are two other mega resorts here in San Antonio.
Now, it's pretty impressive, the array. And I remember seeing what La Quintera originally with the Texas Open, and now it's at the JW course as well, too. So there is kind of a bit of a hotbed here in San Antonio.
Exactly. And a lot of history, too. The city courses are fantastic. You know, you've got Brackenridge, which has, you know, almost the history of golf museum there. Just some great, great golf courses here in San Antonio that people really just don't know of.
Very cool. So I guess one thing that did surprise me is usually when you pull up to resorts and you see resort courses, it's kind of, it tends to be somewhat crammed, and that's the opposite of that here. There's like a very expansive practice facility, and it looks like, you know, with the golf program here, you can actually come and work on your game in addition to like just like rushing out and getting one quick round in. Like, just talk about the facility and what's all to offer here.
Exactly. So we were part of a 3,000 acre ranch, and the resort sits on 300 acres right now. So the golf course and the resort grounds, you know, definitely, like I said, we are built up around this area, around the city, but once you come into the resort, you definitely have a very secluded feel. From the practice facility standpoint, it's fantastic. We have a lot of locals that just come out here just to practice. We sell a player development program, you know, for people to come and just use the practice facility. Full driving range. Great short game area with a practice chipping green and a bunker and little pitching area. It's fantastic, and a huge putting green. Our putting green is actually so big that we had to put an irrigation sprinkler head right in the middle of our putting green. So it's a great practice facility.
Nice, yeah. And I will say, got out and played 9. I'm playing 18 more today. I was wondering what a July course in San Antonio would look like with the way Texas summers are, but it is green. It's lush. It's really pure out there. So definitely worth noting. In terms of your background in golf, tell us a little bit about kind of where you come from in the game. What's your background and what attracted you to this resort specifically?
Absolutely. So I started when I was little. My grandfather was a PGA professional back in Ohio. So I grew up around the game. And
so you know cold weather then a little bit.
Yeah, I know cold weather. That's why I'm down here in Texas now.
Nah, same here, yeah.
You know, 12 years old, I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to be like grandpa. And, you know, so here I am, a PGA professional now for over 20 years. I started with Hyatt in Puerto Rico at Hyatt Dorado Beach back in 2000. And just grown from there. I was head pro. I opened up Hyatt Chesapeake in Maryland in 2002 as director of golf, and opened up Lost Pines Wolf Dancer Golf Club there in Austin. And then I've been here for about 4 years now down here at Hyatt Hill Country in San Antonio.
Nice. I like that. So coming from someone who has known and seen a lot of Hyatt hotels growing up, I kind of knew that aspect of the business. It sounds like there's a real fraternity in your background, and you've been to a lot of different properties within the company. Kind of how's the brand grown into this, you know, this golf resort aspect as well, too? Because that's something that's really on the up and up in terms of travel for people like our audience.
Absolutely. You know, and with Hyatt, you know, we are a small management company compared to the Marriott's and the Hilton's. But I think that's what makes us unique. You know, we can provide more of that one-on-one customer service, which is our goal. You know, that smaller feel. And really what I've done and what I've tried to do with the golf courses within Hyatt is take that Hyatt touch, take that Hyatt hospitality from the hotel side and really bring that onto the golf side and really treat our customers and our resort guests like this is their private club away from home.
I love that. Very cool. So let's get into the course itself. A little bit unique in that there's three nines here, 27 holes. Just kind of going in the background, how did that come about? How did we get to 27? I love the number and it works really well for myself. You know, you play 9 one day, you play 18 the next and you're gone. You know, you can really get in and get a full sense of the course, but how did it get to be 27 holes?
You know, it's an Arthur Hills design. 27 holes is a double-edged sword from an operator's standpoint. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, how's that? How does that work?
It's difficult to manage, and there's many times where I've got to sit down with a pencil and paper and, okay, lakes, creeks, oaks, how are we moving this group around?
I was thinking about that, yeah.
and maximizing the tee sheet, but it really does allow us to maximize the tee sheet and really get more play out there. So we can have a 144-player tournament and still not be able to close the course down. We can still get our members out there and get hotel guests out there. Really provides us a lot more options than just a regular 18-hole course or even a 36-hole course. All three nines are centrally located right here by the clubhouse, so it's easy to get to, easy to stage for tournaments, and easy for our resort guests and members to get around. We did start with 18 holes back in 1993. In 2005, they added an additional 9 holes, and that's when we became 27 holes.
Nice. Very cool. Yeah, and I will say, he's not lying about that. The compactness of the resort. I posted it last night on my Instagram. It's a really elite feeling when you can just take a nice short walk right from the final green into your hotel room. It's a very nice feeling and you don't get it at every resort. So I did appreciate that. So let's get into each of the nines. There's one that I played, so we'll speak from experience. Let's talk about the Oaks. It's an interesting little wraparound and you get some interesting views. I was out there for the sunset, but just kind of describe what people can expect when they go play the Oaks nine.
So the Oaks nine, that's the only nine that contains all 9 holes of the original 18. And honestly, it's probably my favorite nine. Obviously, oaks, there's some large oak trees that are 150, 200-year-old, you know, oak trees
out
there.
I hit a few, I think, yeah.
Oh, yes. You know, a lot more target golf on that nine. You know, it's got some shorter par fours that, you know, definitely risk reward. But then it also has a great par 3, hole number 5, with our irrigation pond in front of the green there, and a nice little elevated perch green with some great bunkering. Really a nice mid-iron shot into that par 3. And then I love number 9, the finishing hole. Comes in and like you said, it finishes right by the resort. We have our Luckenbach Pavilion right behind the green there, which is great. And that also is a double green shared by Creeks 9 as well. So it just gives you kind of a unique feel as you finish up that finishing hole on that 9.
Very cool. Yeah, one thing I did like, and I think resort golfers will appreciate this. Usually when you're playing a resort course, you're on vacation, you kind of want to have, you know, like not the most terrifying torrential experience on the course. So I love that we had some elevated tees. I remember 6 and 9. You can really bomb it on those tees. Let's talk about the 9th and finishing hole, because I posted a beautiful picture with the SeaWorld roller coaster in the background and just that that downhill par 5. Talk about how you play that hole and what's your favorite part about it.
You know, it's you know, definitely a risk reward hole. You've got to, if you hit driver, you've got to hit it pretty straight. You know, like I said, it's oaks, so there's a lot of you know, challenges out there. But it's just a great finishing hole. Elevated tee box. You've got SeaWorld in the background. Beautiful roller coaster view. You know, as you hit your first shot, come down to the landing area. You're going to have a, you know, 220, 240, you know, maybe yard shot into the green. So it's okay. Do I bust out a 3-wood or do I lay it up?
That hazard's right there.
There is. There's creeps a creep up right in front. And then you've only got about 40, 50 yards on the other side to lay up in front of the green. So, you know, depends on how much you're down on that last hole to go for it.
Definitely. Yeah. And shout out to the grounds crew, the Mo pattern. Unbelievable. When you look down the hill, it's picturesque for sure. I did love that.
Definitely.
And then let's talk about what I'm going to experience today. So preview for me the lakes and the creeks. Now, those words imply that there's some more water that I might see. How much, though? What can I expect today out there?
There is, and it's not a whole lot. You know, we're not like a Florida golf course where, you know, there's going to be water on every hole.
Yes.
But definitely, you know, lakes, there's a few lakes out there. Lakes is a great layout. One of my favorite holes is number 6, a very challenging tee shot. It's almost like a double dog leg. The tee shot dog legs a little bit to the left. You go over a creek ravine, and then the next shot dog legs back to the right on your third shot to a par 5 with a pond on the right-hand side of the green, or small lake, we'll say. Great par 5. Another great hole on there is number 8. It's a little par 3, one of my favorite holes. Great, you know, another mid to long iron par three there, and just a great risk reward hole as well. Some great bunkering right in front of the green on the right hand side as well. Creeks is a little bit more open. That has more of the holes of the new design, and you'll see a little bit of a difference in the design between the old original 18, just with the trees that are out there. Creeks is a little bit more open, and definitely to me, Creeks is the better scoring nine. Opportunity for you to make a few more birdies and really take it a little bit deeper on that nine.
Okay, nice, cool. And then I guess on that note, so I played Oaks first, and I'm doing Lakes Creeks today. What's maybe your favorite way to play the 27? If you can do it all in a day or do it all in a weekend, what would be your ideal plan?
I definitely would like to go Oaks, Lakes, and then Creeks. That would be my favorite rotation.
Nice,
for
okay.
Sure.
So I'm nailing it. So I'll give everyone the full review after day two as well, too. Again, we're with Eric Claxton, Director of Golf at the Hyatt Regency Hill Country Resort and Spa in San Antonio, part of the Course of Life Playcation Series. Let's get into just some random quick shot questions regarding the resort. Okay, driving range. I walked out and I saw a target out there. What is that thing? Explain how that got out there.
So when I first got here, our food and beverage team had these cast iron or metal longhorns that they had in the back storage room. And I saw these, and they're literally about 5 feet tall and 6-7 feet long. And I said, what are these from? I said, oh, some group left these here 4 or 5 years ago. They've been sitting back here. So I was like, you know what? I've got the perfect place for these. So I picked them up, took them out on the driving range, and we put two metal longhorns out there on the driving range. And it's great. You know, it gives a great target for our guests to hit at. When you do hit it, you hear it.
Good. Okay. I haven't yet. How far out is it about?
One's about 160 and the other one's about 200.
Nice. Okay. Very cool. Yeah. Shout out to the Texas Longhorns as well. Love that placement on the range. And then for the golfers who are thinking about booking a trip here and they're looking at this and they're maybe like, they're kind of serious about maybe prepping their game for this course. You know, your average 10, 15, 20 handicap is only hitting, you know, 200 something yards off the tee. What kind of game do they want to bring here? What kind of mentality do they want to bring to these courses to play their best golf? Is it going to take precision point to point? Or are they going to have to get over targets? Or kind of what's the best strategy for people who are coming to this resort?
So the best strategy here, when you look at this course on paper, you're like, wow, this course doesn't look very difficult. You know, it's not very long with the standards of courses, newer courses today, but it is very challenging, whereas it's very tight, and you definitely have to be very precise off the tee. And I would say the better players here where you really score is around the greens. So, you know, if you do miss the green, being able to get up and down and get close to the pin there, that's definitely, if I have to give you any advice, is work on that short game before you come out here.
Definitely. Love it, Eric. Appreciate that. So obviously, kind of, you know, elephant in the room, we understand that the landscape of travel and the way everyone's kind of getting around doing vacations has changed a lot recently. So, you know, one thing I noticed as soon as I got to this resort is you guys have taken some extreme precautions to keep everyone really safe and comfortable. And that's comforting for someone who's here at the resort. Just talk about what we're doing on the golf side to ensure that kind of golfers are safely playing here and having a good time.
Definitely. You know, there's been a lot of adaptations from the local and state government on what we can and can't do. So we've been watching that very closely. And our number one concern is the safety of our associates and of our guests. So, you know, we really take it very serious. From the golf standpoint, we are all staff is getting temperature checked every day. You know, we feel that's a very important step to ensure everyone's safety.
Nice.
We are, all of our guests are being asked very specific questions when they come on property, you know, related to the pandemic, to try to make sure that they have not been exposed or have any symptoms. From the golf course and operations side, we're limiting the number of people in the golf shop and they must wear a mask inside. We've taken the towels and sand bottles off the golf carts. We do stock them with tees and scorecards. We feel it's better for just one of our staff doing that than having multiple guests reaching in and grabbing stuff.
Didn't think about that.
Yep. So, you know, definitely we're doing that. All of the rakes have been removed from the golf course, and we are sanitizing the golf carts, you know, of course, before each use. So it's definitely been an adjustment, but we've been doing it now for a couple, 2 or 3 months already now. So we're in the rhythm, and also we are allowing 2 people per cart now, you know, which was allowed by the government. We're not fully mandating that. We're allowing people to choose if they want to. But if they do want to ride together, we are allowing that.
Important to know that you have those options if you're coming here. So that's definitely something to keep in mind when you're booking a vacation, especially a golf-related one too. It's a safe course, and I've enjoyed my time here for sure. Let's kind of get into the one thing that I do know is still going. The drink cart is still going, so don't worry about that. That is still going on, and life happens.
Jennifer's out there, and she's waiting for you.
Nice. Awesome. Okay, so everyone rest assured, you'll have that option on the course. That's not going away. Obviously, we want to get the clubhouse bar back in the 19th hole, but we finish all of our interviews with the 19th hole question. So give me a little lowdown of what happens on the 19th hole once we get this thing back open, and tell me kind of what are your best maybe like food and drink options after you come in here after a round.
Absolutely. So being a resort, you know, we have 9 different food and beverage outlets. So we have to be very selective as to which ones we have open and closed. So the golf 19th hole, Cactus Oak is what we call it, Cactus Oak Grill. We have that only open on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday right now. And it is to go because it is considered a bar. So you can pre-order your lunch or your food before you play. And we'll have that ready for you when you're finished. As far as the menu options, for me, I love the Arnold Palmer. You can't beat it.
Oh yeah.
Nice refreshing drink after a nice hot day here in Texas.
And then if it doesn't go well, it's maybe a John Daly too.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So some to it. Yeah.
Depends on your round. Absolutely. And then we have, the best chicken wings. They are unbelievable. Our chef here is fantastic. He's put a little Texas flair on it. And, so definitely if you come, you've got to try the lime chicken wings. They are fantastic.
Love it. It's good flavor too. Appreciate that. Eric Claxton, it's the Hyatt Regency Hill Country Resort and Spa in San Antonio, part of the Course of Life Playcation Series. Eric, thanks so much for joining, man. Appreciate it. Look forward to getting out there today.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming out and having me on. I appreciate it.
And we're back. Great chat there with Eric Claxton. Sounds like you had a great trip, and really cool to get that insight on how you manage 27 holes
yes,
of golf.
That's right. A lot of logistics there for Eric. He said yeah. Those Saturday, spring, and fall days, the tee sheet can be a little confusing, not for the faint of heart. But yeah, I had a really nice empty course when I went out there right now. For anyone who's looking to do that type of staycation or road trip in Texas or abroad or visiting Texas, nice, safe place to stay. Really enjoyed the hospitality there. And 3 great nines with some really cool vistas. So a great spot and a great joy having Eric on as well.
Let's do a little childhood throwback for a moment,
Alex.
Been
in a while.
And really, because this past week we lost one of our childhood giants. Regis Philbin passed away.
Yes.
And for kids these days, they don't realize how important Regis was to our childhood.
Yes. So let me start first with Regis and Kathy Lee. That 9 a.m. time slot, summer, sick days, snow days. I tuned into that TV show it was the only thing in the world on, and I learned so much in pop culture from Regis and Kathy Lee. And it's funny to think that he's gone, because he's just a fixture of our childhood and just one of those kind of random TV figures that like it or not, we just grew up with him. He's a part of us.
I mean, in terms of the pop culture status, if we really need to say that he wasn't there, which he was, and he was pop culture. He was the host of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire,
for crying out loud. That debut, huge.
Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Is that I was watching some episodes of Seinfeld today, and on came the coffee table episode when Kramer goes on Regis and Kelly to talk about his coffee table book.
That's right. Good shout out to a classic Seinfeld episode there. And shout out to Regis. Rest in peace to him. Definitely a figure of our childhood. So we wanted to shout him out.
Let's talk baseball for a minute, Alex.
Let's do it. We're doing a little return to sports series here in the latter half of our episodes. And we got to dive into baseball first because it's back. Question mark? It's back.
It's back, but it may be over.
Right
now. Let's talk about what's happened so far in the season, and then we'll talk about what happened today. It's a Monday that we're recording this episode. So baseball came back. The Yankees won the season opener because the Yankees are the better team. They would have won it all if not for those cheating Houston Astros.
Right, of course.
So
shout out to the track cans.
Let's move on past that. We had crowd noise.
Yes.
Which felt weird. We had cardboard cutouts. I'm against them, by the way.
Okay, I was going to ask yay or nay on cardboard cutouts.
Yeah, so, no, not a fan.
there's a lot of teams that are doing the cardboard cutouts differently. Some are doing none at all. Some are doing like very special cardboard cutouts. Like, for instance, I was watching the Padres and Diamondbacks, and the Padres in the front row, they actually put cardboard cutouts of the starting pitcher's family. So it's like kind of a comfort thing that they can like see his family right behind home plate, even though it's a cardboard cutout.
It would be better if they switched him out every series or every game and they put like, you know, people that the current starting pitcher hates of the opposing team. Ooh,
that's good strategy right there. The thing that just weirded me out about the cardboard cutouts is it's normal to see an adult's face, but when you blow up a baby's head to make him the same size as the adult cutout, it then kind of weirdens and cheapens the situation. It's just a laugh, and I become immediately distracted by the giant baby in the front row because they would never have their own seat anyway, and you've given it to them. I do appreciate the random dogs like out in right field and stuff like that. That's a joke I can get along with, but they're really kind of creepy at this immediate moment. I don't know. I think it's one of those things, maybe with crowd noise, I'll get more and more used to it and come around fully, but it's going to take some time.
I'm not going to get used to. You know what else I'm not going to get used to, though, is when the manager comes out of the dugout to argue, both the manager and the ump need to take a second, put their mask on, and then stay 6 feet apart.
So unbelievably polite, that little moment I showed you from, I think, Cardinals Pirates, where the manager came out. They both put their mask on. Unfortunately, the manager felt the need to push his mask down to enunciate about five or six words. Like, I was like, dude, you did it right for like 95% of the argument, except for the moment you pushed your mask down. Just a very awkward scene watching ump and manager yell at each other from 6 feet away. I don't know if it was quite 6 feet, but whatever. It's just strange all around to see.
I think I was more surprised that we have no fans in the crowd and we couldn't get mics on them.
Not a thing. God forbid we have any of that sort of interaction like they're doing on the tour right now. It's funny to see the bullpens that have extended out into the crowd. I just saw a Mets fan in Fenway Park, a Mets bullpen pitcher, ran up to get the home run ball from a Mets player, and then he threatened to throw it back onto the field as if he was a drunken, angry Red Sox fan. He didn't, just the threat was funny. So there's just a lot of weird in-stands moments and spotlights on camera that you would never get in an alternate reality, but that's exactly what we're in right now. Baseball, it's looking weird.
So let's talk about the other thing that's happening in baseball right now. So yesterday, Sunday, a number of Miami Marlins players tested positive for the coronavirus. They still let them stay in Philadelphia and play the Phillies. Yes. But now we've had another like 12 players or coaches or staff test positive. The Marlins game is canceled tonight. The Phillies game is canceled tonight. This is looking bad right now. The whole point of protocols is so this doesn't happen.
And as people listen here, it's probably canceled for at least the next day or two. I'm safely saying that. There's a lot of question marks about the future of the season right now as we stand. And the bottom line is that, listen, the Marlins are based in Miami. They started their season in Miami. Not a great place to be right now. They moved to Atlanta. They were on the road in Atlanta. You think a bunch of 20-something professional baseball players didn't leave their hotel room in Atlanta? Unfortunately, you're a little naive, ladies and gentlemen, because they did on the road. And then they went to Philadelphia and you saw what you saw from there. So, you know, it's just proof that you really got to batten down the hatches, especially if your team going on the road from wherever you're coming. It's one thing when you're at home base, but moving these teams city to city is going to clearly be a big issue moving forward for the game. And there's going to have to be some more resolution to keep the season going.
So here's the thing. PGA Tour moves to city every week. You got a bunch of 20-somethings there. They're not going out and having issues. Yeah, they had some positive tests, but we didn't have the same outbreak that we seem to be having right now with the Marlins. And who knows if that's going to cascade through umpires and players as well. So
the golf is week to week, money to money, check to check.
Yeah.
Even though those guys are PGA Tour players, they don't play. They don't get a dime. These guys are all getting their money in baseball, right? That's really key difference here. So I'm not surprised that there is a laissez-faire attitude from some players who are just like, it's a 60 game season. I'm still getting paid. Do I really have to follow all the regulations? I feel like I'm getting a little of that vibe from some players.
I mean, I'd be curious to know what is worked in, you know, I haven't read the deal. I don't know what's really is or isn't allowed in Major League Baseball right now, but it'd be curious to see what exactly are there consequences for players that break the protocols? Because that's the question here. Did we break protocol from these players? And yeah. if so, they should be punished for that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see here in the coming weeks for however long we see baseball. Already lots of question marks in week one. That was kind of our quick look at the return of sports and the baseball. And to tease next week, we'll talk about a sport that is doing things really right. And I'm really excited about the hashtag the bubble. I'm loving the bubble life on Twitter. It's fun to follow. They're coming back later this week. So we'll talk NBA on next week's episode.
Let's get into our favorite segment every week. Hashtag always end with food.
Yes, that's right. And we need to talk about a tweet surrounding iced coffee, Michael. I'm going to talk some iced coffee.
That is, iced coffee is sacred to
me. It's life. It's my official drink. It gets me going in the morning. I have it every single day of my life. I don't know about you, but it's a necessity. I do too. And it blows my mind. This is now the second mainstream person in sports that I've seen who is a grown adult that is trying to tell me on Twitter that they just had iced coffee for the first time in my life. So for a little backstory, Mike, former NBA player who you might recognize by name, Nick Van Exel. He was a lefty that played on the Lakers, Nuggets, and much other teams in the 90s. He had a viral tweet about 6 or 12 months ago about how he had just tried iced coffee for the first time in his life. And it blew everyone's minds. People were stunned to hear that and just can't believe that a guy as traveled as he was. Then all of a sudden this past weekend, same tweet, Mike Greenberg, Greeny from ESPN and ESPN Radio says he had never had iced coffee once in his life until this past week. And he admitted he liked it. But my question for you is this BS? Are these guys joking with us, or have they really never had iced coffee before?
Well, here's the thing. So we grew up in New England.
Yeah.
And we grew up on Dunkin' Donuts. In fact, most kids that are born in New England have a cup of Dunkin' Donuts put in their hand as they come out of the womb.
Yes, and an old one in their back seat that they couldn't get under the seat.
Yeah. And they're given both a styrofoam cup of hot and a nice cup of iced coffee. And they get to choose which one they want to drink. And you go into your corners. You have the people who drink hot coffee. It doesn't matter if it's 105 degrees out. Mm. And the people who drink your iced coffee. It doesn't matter if it's negative 30 degrees out. I was one of those people that drank iced coffee. It didn't matter how cold it was.
Very well put.
So I don't know if that translated outside of New England.
Yeah, that could be a regional thing. And maybe Starbucks just isn't really promoting their iced coffee like Dunkin' was back in the last 10, 20 years. I don't know. I don't know what kind of brand they – you know Starbucks better than I do. But is there kind of more of a hot coffee focus on that audience? Because I feel like this could be a regional thing. You're right.
I don't know. I mean, Starbucks didn't really push coffee. They pushed their espresso drink. So if you're going to go to Starbucks and get something iced, you're going to get a nice latte or something. You're not going to get an iced coffee as much. So, I mean, the cold brew coffee has really only gotten big in, the last 4 years? So I think I'm more surprised that it took them this long to not try some sort of iced coffee or a cold brew coffee, considering that you're probably traveling around and going to these different towns and cities. Yeah. I love to go to local coffee shops and try their iced coffee or their cold brew.
Yeah. Okay. So Mike Greenberg, if you're listening, call on in, hit me in the DMs if you want to join and defend your tweet, because I'm really mystified by how you could have never run into an iced coffee or a cold brew in your life just by accident or just being handed to you in some sort of morning setting. But we'll see if he's up for the challenge.
I don't.
What have you been up to on the food front lately? What's going on with you?
So I got my biweekly local farm bag this week, and actually forgot to change some of the things in it because it was busy week, and I forgot to email and change something. So I got tomatillos, which I probably wouldn't have gotten in the bag, and blueberries, which I like blueberries, but I probably wouldn't have gotten blueberries.
Fan. Love that.
And I didn't know what to do with them. So I ended up making a tomatillo chicken bowl, made a roasted tomatillo sauce. Quite good, actually.
That sounds relatively healthy as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was tomatillos, jalapenos, poblanos, shallots, garlic, blended together, simmer it down, cook your chicken in it, serve it over rice.
Wow, done. Splendid. Nice work.
Great. Pretty easy. And then also made some blueberry coffee cake with the blueberries.
That's an all-timer. That hits my childhood sweet spot right there. That's a top five dessert on my list.
I've been enjoying that for the last 2 days.
Man, so. That's not as healthy, but so, so good. Oh, man.
Made up for it with the chicken bowl. Made up for
definitely.
It.
Definitely. So. Like, nice use of the farm right there. And shout out to you. Shout out to everyone else. Hashtag always end with food. We're big foodies on the show. In addition to everything we love in golf, sports, and pop culture. For Michael, I'm Alex. This has been another edition of The Course of Life. We'll see you next week.